So yesterday was a kind of freaky day. 72 degrees in the dead middle of winter. January 28th, and people are out jogging on the trolley trail in shorts and t-shirts. I saw bicyclists pedaling the streets, and I passed by a bike shop in Waldo where the doors were propped open as if they were saying, "Hey, if global warming is happening, at least enjoy it on a bike." Now, of course, I was driving, contributing to the CO2 emissions, but believe me, I would have rather been on a bike. Good morning. This is Central Standard. I'm Stephen Steigman. What would it take to get you to bike to work or leave your car at home and bike to run your errands? Is Kansas City a biking town, or will Kansas City never rise to the level of a cycle-centered city? Our number is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org, or you can tweet us at KCURCST. Aaron Bartlett is a bicycle and training coordinator for the Mid-America Regional Council. Aaron, nice to see you.
Thank you.
And Deb Ridgway is the bicycle pedestrian coordinator for the city of Kansas City, Missouri. Deb, nice to have you back in the studio.
Good to be here.
I have to ask the two of you, on this really horribly rainy day, did you don your rain gear and cycle down to our studios? And if not, how did you get here? Confession time, right?
It's confession time. I drove the city car over here to the meeting.
Oh, my God.
I got my 97 Accord and came down.
and the remarkable efficiency. Well, commuting by bicycle works for some and not for others. I have a short commute to work, seems perfect for a bike ride, but I don't do it that often, and I'm guessing I'm not alone. How many people in Kansas City actually bike to work? I mean, I'm not looking for actual numbers. I'm looking for maybe very few or a lot, or you tell me.
Go ahead, Deb.
I'm sorry. I know that from the household travel survey that Mark did in 2004, we're only at about 0.5% of the population that bike to work on a regular basis. So we're well below the national average, which is 5%, and we're certainly well below Portland and Seattle and some of our more bike-friendly cities.
Well, what kind of person does it take to turn to cycling? I mean, growing up, biking was a weekend thing, a sport, not a daily commute.
Wow, you have tough questions.
I'm sorry.
Morning. That's okay. You know, I think it's different.
What's a bicycle?
Well,
I'm just kidding.
What's a bicycle? It has two wheels. No. You know, I think it's different for everybody, and you know, it does take, I think, some encouragement as well as some training, kind of getting used to. And I know you're going to have someone from Revolve on as part of the show who does some really good adult education, kind of teaching people how to ride in traffic.
Yeah.
There is a certain skill set to it.
Sure.
And a certain sense of fearlessness when you don't have streets that have bike facilities on them.
I mean, most kids grew up when they learned to ride a bike on the sidewalk of their street, you know, whether it be in the city or in suburbia. They were relatively sheltered from cars. But all of a sudden, when you get into traffic, it's a little bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the other thing is, too, it's teaching motorists how to share the road safely with cyclists. And that's probably, I think, our biggest deterrent is and our biggest challenge is how do you reach the driving population to teach them how to share the road.
Hmm.
There is a certain skill set to it.
Well, Aaron, that brings up a good question. Let's turn to the mecca of bicycling, Portland, Oregon. Why do so many people there bicycle?
Well, I think it's part of the culture. That city has really promoted bicycling by putting in facilities on roadways, bike lanes, bike boxes at intersections. It's just part of kind of their makeup. It's part of their day. I wouldn't say necessarily that the weather's that much better. Maybe it's
maybe today.
Yeah. But no, I think there are certainly things that motivate people to get out and bicycle. The traditional things like fitness, saving money. It's good for the environment. All of those things are the kinds of reasons that people bicycle. But I think that in a city like Portland, people are just more aware of that, I suppose.
Go back for a second. What is a bike box?
A bicycle box is is an area that is painted at an intersection that allows for a bicyclist to move to the front of a vehicle to make a left-hand turn.
I got it.
And establish that presence there as they're making that left-hand turn.
Well, let's talk a little bit, continue this, because I'm guessing there are other infrastructure things in place. And I'll get to trails and markings and stuff like that in a few minutes. But I wanted to talk a little bit about things like bike storage and bike facilities. What do other cities have that maybe Kansas City doesn't have as many of? What kind of infrastructure changes could make this a more bike-friendly city?
I think just adding more bike lanes in general, as well as some of the more innovative kinds of things that have been used in other cities, like colored pavement, the green bike boxes, green bike lanes, stuff that just makes bicycling on the street more visible to everyone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I think about bike racks. Mm-hmm. There seems to be proliferation of bike racks in Kansas City. Every new structure, mm-hmm. it builds in bike racks. I see them empty most of the time, but they're there at least. How about another type of bike box, storage lockers and things like that? Do you think that would encourage more people to – do people not bike because they're worried that their bike is going to get stolen?
I don't think that is an issue in Kansas City. We haven't – I know a few people who have had their bikes stolen, I don't think we're at that sort of critical point yet, but you know, bike boxes, any type of centralized bike parking certainly helps to encourage. It's oftentimes the first visible sign that you're a bike friendly community is, do you have bike racks
right
in front of businesses?
One of the things that I kind of going back to your last question too about Portland is it's also a big public transit city.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times as planners we're dealing with that last mile dilemma. Basically, getting from your home to the bus stop and from the bus stop where you get left off to work or wherever. And the bicycle really provides a great way to solve that last mile dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
But other things like parking are also essential, because if you don't have a place to put your bike once you get there, or a place that you feel it's safe or on a day like today, covered, you know, it can make it, you know, bicycling pretty difficult, because who wants to come out to get on their bicycle, you know, and have it basically covered in water and the seats all wet and that sort of thing.
Is that what a plastic bag is for?
Sure. I mean, that helps.
Or taking your seat off and bringing it in, bring your saddle inside.
But I do think it says a lot about us if we are willing to invest money into a bike locker that is sheltered from the rain and the snow. And you know, you can go out and get on your bike and know it's been safe and it's been sheltered from the rain. So those kinds of things, I think, do help. But even beyond that, a lot of people that want to bike to work also find that once they get there, they need somehow to clean up.
Yeah.
So we really encourage, you know, employers to look into things like bike or lockers on the inside of their, you know, where people can put their things,
mm-hmm.
Even showers. Those kinds of things can be great. Because if you can incorporate as a part of your daily commute bicycling, and that becomes part of what also keeps you in shape, then you're really doing two things for yourself at the same time. Plus, you're reducing our dependence on foreign oil. You're protecting the environment. Those are all wonderful things. So these things all have to come together, and it's kind of a puzzle, really.
Hmm.
And we just have to remove the obstacles for people to be able to do that.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Steven Steigman. We're talking today about commuting by bike and biking in general. If you're a cyclist, if you commute to work on your bike, or you moved here from a city where you did commute on a bicycle but don't do it here, we'd like to hear from you. Our number, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can email us, centralstandard@kcur.org, or post on KCUR's Facebook page. Well, now, biking is easier now than it was 10 years ago, right? I mean, we have better trail systems. We have better lane markings. I know of a few trails, but for those out there who only know of a few, tell us about these trails and how they contribute to the Kansas City area being a cycling-friendly region.
Sure. Well, for Kansas City, Missouri, you know, we've been at kind of 25 fragmented miles of trails for many, many years, with the Trolley Trail really being our only long, continuous, significant mileage of trails. Mm-hmm. But this year, actually just 2 weeks ago, we rolled out a new bike facilities map showing that we've built 65 miles of continuous trail. Mm-hmm. So up in the Northland, you'll find Line Creek Trail, Shoal Creek Trail, beautiful, beautiful facilities, North Platte County Pass Trail. Is another one that it's been a partnership between multiple jurisdictions.
You mentioned beautiful facilities. What types of facilities contribute to a beautiful trail?
Well, for me, now this is my personal opinion.
A coffee
you
shop.
Know, having trails in kind of the natural environment. We do build trails that follow along, you know, an adjacent roadway like Vivian Road Trail. Mm-hmm. It's nice, but being on a trail in a natural environment, in a natural setting, along a stream, along a creek, to me, is you're in the city, you're in the heart of the city, mm-hmm. but you feel like you're, you know, out in the middle of nowhere.
It really turns a commute into a much more pleasant experience.
Yeah,
it's kind of time to either decompress before work or, well, get ready for work or decompress after work, right?
And one of the things that the city's working on in the coming year is an update to our Bike KC plan. And with that, we're going to integrate the Trails KC plan, which identified 230 miles for trail development, with our on-street system, which is 600 miles of city streets. Mm-hmm. So the idea being that we want those on-road connections to the trails so that your front door is your trailhead. You shouldn't have to load up the car and drive 10 miles to go ride 5 miles.
Now, was that all part of the original plan?
It's evolved over time.
Tell us how it's evolved.
I think that, you know, for many years in the Kansas City, Missouri, it's been kind of a trails versus on-street battle. You'll have people who are in either camp defending which should be the only facility built. Mm-hmm. And now we're finally realizing that, you know, trails can serve a transportation purpose as well as recreation, mm-hmm. and that the on-street facilities help to encourage that. And I think we do have a much more environmentally conscious population in the region who really do care about how we do get around, our impacts to the environment, and their quality of life.
Aaron Bartlett from the Mid-America Regional Council, how does Mark get involved in working with multiple municipalities on bike-friendly systems?
Well, I'd say one of the things that we do, which is common to a lot of the communities that we work with, is we try to address issues that extend beyond one jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So whether it's water quality or it's trail development, they're similar in that sense. In the last couple of years, really beginning in like 2007, we began working with a group called the Turkey Creek Coalition, made up of Miriam, Kansas, Roland Park, the Unified Government of Kansas City, Kansas, and others. And we began to look at that corridor because it has so many different municipalities involved in it. It really required us to take a holistic view of that and to develop a plan. As a result of that, many of the communities went back and adopted a memorandum of understanding.
Oh, yes.
Basically, it's just a way for them to say, we recognize the plan that's here, and now we're going to work together to build our pieces of it.
Well, do you encounter any resistance from lawmakers or other officials, or is everyone in favor of cycling?
We've had really overwhelming support for these kinds of things. We find that with the surveys that we do, people want trails. People recognize that these are amenities for our community. And they really offer quite a bit of different things, really, to people. Like Deb was saying, there's the whole connecting back with the natural environment piece of it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times, you know, families feel more comfortable on a trail system, especially if it's one that goes for a number of miles. And we really have some incredible trail systems in the region. I did some statistics this morning, and We have a total of 555 miles of trail systems built within the region right now.
Mm-hmm. How many of them are bike friendly, meaning like surfaces that are friendly, they're packed surfaces or they're paved surfaces? Because not all trails are great for biking on.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Of the 555 that I was talking about, those are either asphalt paved. Mm-hmm. Or they may be a crushed limestone, like the trolley track.
Right.
We also have...
Which gets muddy when it rains, by the way. I thought I'd let you know that.
It does.
Not that you didn't know that already.
But there are other examples. Say, for example, mountain biking trails, which a lot of people don't realize we have a lot of. But the single track mountain biking trails, we have 84 miles of those in different locations. Those are mainly like in park areas where they've gone in and developed those. Swope Park, I know that they've got some excellent ones there and all over the region. We also have pedestrian hike trails, which are just really more for people that are out, walking and,
right.
and hiking, not so much the mountain biking. And we have a total of 175 miles of pedestrian hike trails. Now, I know this is a little off the topic, but equestrian, they're out there too, and we have 70
Don't
miles.
Don't forget about the horses.
That's right. So, getting back to kind of where we're at right now, if you look at the number of on-road facilities versus off-road facilities, we have a total of 459 miles of on-road facilities, such as the bike lanes or the bike routes that are signed, things like that, mm-hmm. 550 miles of the off-road. So between those two, it's roughly 45% to 55%.
Mm. Let's take a couple of calls here, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us, centralstandard@kcur.org. Let's say hi to Jenny in Olathe. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
Go ahead.
I'm calling with kind of a perspective from a mom of a young family. I've got three small kids. My husband and I actually started our family overseas. We were in Paris for a year and in Zurich for 6 years. And so we live that kind of slower-paced recreational life where biking and hiking were very accessible, very easy, and started our family that way and moved back to this area a few years ago and have been kind of trying to acclimate to how we can incorporate that into mm-hmm. our family more and have struggled with it. I mean, we're in Olathe. We're in South Johnson County, and there are beautiful trails down here. I heard you talking about the trails and families biking that. And we experience that. We feel very nice once we can get through a trail. But one of the things we struggle with is just, with a couple small kids on a bike being kind of wobbly, just even getting over main roads, just having accessibility without having to load all of the bikes up into a car or something and drive to a trail.
Sure,
actually getting there and feeling safe as a family. So,
well, tell us about some of your strategies. How do you, and how old are your kids now?
They're 9, 7, and 6.
Okay, so they're responsible kids, and but how do you keep all five of you together? Do you set down rules for who goes first and where you bike and things like that?
Well, yeah, my husband and I usually end up like one of us will take two kids and one of us will stay with the lagger, the 6-year-old. I mean, that's just because the two older are boys, and so they're ready to rock and roll, and they stay with dad, and I'm usually with the, little straggler back behind. She's a go-getter. But, yeah, we set down rules with them. But we've got one big road that we have to get across that really doesn't have a friendly crossing area anywhere. So we have to kind of do the Frogger crossing. I call it the Frogger crossing.
Jenny, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate
it.
Thanks. Let's say hi to George in Kansas City, Missouri. George, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to share my views on cycling in Kansas City.
You're a bike commuter, aren't you?
Well, I've been a bike commuter actually all of my working life. I've retired now, but I can look back on at least 40 years, I think, of cycling to and from my various workplaces.
Wow. And did you build that into your decision on where to live?
Well, we really did. We had moved from the Utrecht in the Netherlands, where we lived for 3 years, to Kansas City. And although we spent 1 year in an apartment, my wife and kids started looking around for housing close to my workplace, which was the University of Kansas Medical Center. Mm-hmm. And we settled on Brookside, when, of course, we haven't regretted that for a minute. So from Brookside to get to the to KU Med Center, I had all kinds of options. And I learned right away that I was better off on smaller roads, even though they may include steeper hills. It was still a quieter, more peaceful ride to and from work.
George, let me ask our guests here in studio, is that a good rule of thumb to try to avoid the arterial routes and go for some side streets?
I think it is. And Kansas City, even though it's not laid out in a strict grid system, does offer a number of rather straightforward routes on side streets. And it was just my preference all along. And back when I first started commuting in 1976, there were no bike lanes marked. There were no shared lanes. There were no signages to share the road. So I think more from a practical point of view, I chose side streets. Mm.
George, you mentioned you spent some time in Utrecht, and I've spent some time in Rotterdam, where I know they've got some like separated bike lanes. And I want to turn to that. George, I appreciate your phone call today. There are differences between Kansas City's been putting a lot of bike markings on its streets, and I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about the different types. And whether or not motorists are actually paying attention. What's the difference between a shared bike lane and a dedicated bike lane? And tell me about the markings that you'll see on each.
The shared bike markings mean just exactly that, where the cyclist is allowed to take the lane that the same lane the motorist is traveling in, and that the motorist should yield to that cyclist and pass one when safe. A dedicated lane is just that. It's only cyclists are to be in that lane. Both are bike lanes tend to be used more on your arterials and secondary arterials, so where you have higher traffic volumes, maybe a little higher speed. So like we've gotten they're on 87th Street or Congress. North Congress has bike lanes. We put in shared lane markings on Armour Boulevard.
What do shared lane markings look like?
They are a symbol. They're a bike symbol with two chevron markings, kind of two arrows in advance of the cyclist image to indicate the direction of travel. And to also, they're placed such that it also is to indicate to cyclists where is a safe place to kind of be in that driving lane for them, kind of keeping them out of the door zone and of parked cars.
The door zone, okay.
Sorry, parked cars in door zone.
Well, that brings up another question. What does it take to make a dedicated bike lane? Do you have to eliminate parking when you make a dedicated bike lane?
Sometimes. It depends on, you know, the thing with Kansas City, we're retrofitting a lot of our existing streets, so we're not moving the curb. And so you've got to work within the current infrastructure that you have. And so sometimes, it's a matrix of a decision-making in terms of when you apply a dedicated lane versus a sharrow. So presence of parking.
Shared
lane markings.
Okay,
sorry.
All right. That's okay.
Jargon.
That's all right. I'm glad you're explaining this to us.
And so, you know, posted speed limit as well as, you know, the amount of car travel on that roadway all go into that decision making.
Are motorists paying attention?
That's a good question. I don't know for sure. I hope that they are. Uh-huh. There's signage that goes with it as well. And
I mean, have we seen an increase in cyclists or a decrease in injuries since a number of these marks have gone in?
I don't know that we've done any studies at this time.
Anecdotal evidence?
You know, my observed behavior is I think motorists are, you know, being more cautious. I think they're being more aware to bicyclists on the road. My personal experience has been, you know, that, but everybody who bikes has a different experience. So
you're nodding your head, Aaron.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is something that I think is somewhat of a perception. But what we do know is that the more bicyclists that are out on the road, the more common it is, more frequency that motorists encounter a bicyclist, the safer it is for the cycling community.
Well, according to a study from the University of British Columbia, dedicated bike lanes, also known as cycle tracks, where bicyclists are physically separated from motor vehicle traffic, have a much lower risk of injury. Have we studied using these cycle tracks, these separated bike lanes, and why don't we just install them?
Well,
I know it's not as simple as that, but have we looked at them?
It's not. We have looked at them. I've read some of those studies. You know, I'm not convinced that it's safer. I've ridden in cycle tracks in Europe myself. Maintenance of those cycle tracks become an issue. You need specialized equipment to clear them of snow, keep them free of debris.
Okay.
So whereas if you have a facility that's in the travel lane, so whether that's a dedicated bike lane or the Sharo or shared lane marking, I can use standard equipment to go out there and do street cleaning, et cetera, and keep that clear. Whereas, you know, if you've got a cycle track, you've got to have special equipment. So the Heart of America Bridge is an example, closest example we have of a cycle track, in that it's a barrier separated facility. It is bidirectional, but we've had many issues with keeping that clean of debris.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll investigate bike safety and take some of the mystery out of finding a good bike for you and your family. Kansas City, what would it take for you to bike to work or leave your car at home and bike to run errands? Is Kansas City a biking town, or will Kansas City never rise to that level? Our number, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You could email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Central Standard returns in a moment. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Stephen Steigman. We're joined today by Aaron Bartlett. He's a bicycle training coordinator for the Mid-America Regional Council, and Deb Ridgway, the bicycle pedestrian coordinator for the city of Kansas City, Missouri. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Elizabeth Bajan, who started and runs Revolve KC. Kansas City, what would it take to get you to bike to work or leave your car at home and bike to run errands? Are we a biking town? 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. You can also email us, centralstandard@kcur.org. I'd like to get back a little bit to talking about bike lanes and bike trails and things like that. Is cycling safer than driving? What do the numbers tell us? And is this a per capita type of thing?
Do you have any data on that, Aaron?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to kind of put a risk maybe to cycling. It depends a lot on different factors, contributing circumstances that, you know, you figure into that. Obviously, the road that you pick to ride on, the speed of the traffic, the volume, what time of day you're riding, all those things are going to figure in. And especially if it's at nighttime, you know, you have to be well lit, those kinds of things.
Right.
But I would say that a person who knows how to ride on the road, knows the rules of the road, who follows all of those things can be very safe.
Yeah.
And so the perception, I think, of a lot of people out there is that probably bicycling is less safe, but that's not really true.
Well, how often is a bicyclist injured by a motorist?
Well, if you're looking at just fatalities themselves, those are pretty rare, really, when you look at them. The numbers each year are somewhere between 4 and 6. And so if you're looking at the total number of fatalities in the region, that's still a fairly small number.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's 6 too many,
yeah.
4 too many.
Got it. I mean, are there other injuries, you know, cyclists hitting other cyclists hitting pedestrians, sometimes underreported, I understand. And what role does that play in developing safer bicycling in Kansas City?
Those are good questions, Stephen. And, you know, we don't always we aren't always able to capture that data because when those crashes happen, they go unreported. Oftentimes, unless an ambulance is called, there's no reporting mechanism.
There's like
for
no
that.
Insurance claim form for something like that.
Exactly. And so I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. It certainly does. But I think those incidences are really rare, as Aaron said.
How dangerous is cycling even without cars?
I don't think it's that dangerous. Again, if you, it's a skill that you have to learn, just like it's a skill to drive a car, and you have to learn how to drive a bike.
Yeah.
And, you know, as Aaron mentioned, there are rules to the, you know, rules of the road. They have to follow the same rules as a motorist, act as a motor vehicle when they're on the road. And I think a lot of it comes with confidence. You know, when I grew up in the country riding on rural roads that were, you know, not traveled by a lot of cars. So it was, you know, you sort of had the road to yourself.
Sure. It's nice.
And so there are still some streets like that in Kansas City. And that's kind of the backbone of a lot of our on-road system is those low local neighborhood streets. But I think programs like Elizabeth and Bike Walk KC does some programming. Some folks in Rosedale do a lot of are doing some work with adults, teaching them how to ride. And it's you kind of build your confidence over time.
Let's take a few phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Scott from Leawood, thanks for holding for us. Go ahead. Scott, you there? Let's say hi to Ken in Kansas City, Missouri. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
I just moved back here last year from New York City. Not a very bike-friendly city, but boy, did I ride my bike around there a lot. And I was hoping to find out more about what's going on biking in Kansas City. How about north of the river? Did I miss that part that you might have talked about?
Are you talking about facilities or clubs or things?
Bike clubs, anything like that?
Okay. Ken,
or is it all in the vein about below the river?
Sure, good questions here. Aaron, you got an answer for him?
Well, north of Kansas City, they've done quite a bit with sheros along some of the roads up there, like Swift Boulevard. North of that area, I think Deb can probably talk about some of the things that are happening in Kansas City, Missouri. But we've seen quite a bit of development around trails up in Clay County and Platte County. One example of that would be Smithville Lake, where they have an incredible number of trails that run around the lake area. Beyond that, it's probably more the bike lanes and some marked or signed bike routes, things like that.
Deb?
Actually, a majority of our bike lanes that we've put in this last few years have been in the Northland. So we've got bike lanes on North Brighton, North Amity, North Oak, Berry Road, U.S. 169 and 96th Street. Those have all been additional bike lanes. Also on Northeast 108th Street, we have the sheros or shared lane markings. So there's in addition to the trail work that I mentioned earlier, with Line Creek, Shoal Creek, Southern Platte Pass.
What does gender play a role in bicycling success? Are there more men out there than women bicycling? And if so, what needs to be done to attract women to cycling?
I think certainly the stereotype is, you know, the upper middle class white male is your typical cyclist. But I think that's really changing and growing. I think there's a very strong group here locally of women. We have two bike shops that are women owned in Kansas City. I think that also encourages the work that Elizabeth's doing as a woman owned nonprofit. You know, I think all of that helps to boost more women of all ages biking.
Well, that was a very nice introduction you did for us. I'd like to bring in Elizabeth Pajon. She started and runs Revolve KC, a bike shop just up the street from our studios here on Troost. Elizabeth, I drive by your shop twice a day, and every day I say to myself, I must stop and find a bike. Tell us a bit about your shop. Why the corner of 51st and Troost? It used to be a Standard Oil gas station years ago. That's a nice twist of fate.
Oh, that's our pride and joy, that we have transformed a former auto repair station into a bike repair station. That is not by accident. And it's no accident that we are right in behind a major bus stop.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. The MAX is right there. And do you find, do any people get off that bus and say, bike shop, I should stop in?
Many times.
Really?
And if they don't come in, I will get out there and talk to them.
Really? Are you going out there with a sign saying, come on in?
I just say, hey, I got a bike for you. Come on in and let me tell you about our Earn a Bike program.
But tell us about the Earn a Bike program.
Well, I would love to. We operate as a nonprofit bike shop to remove that fear and financial burden.
Fear? You mean fear of what? Fear of cycling?
Yes. In Kansas City specifically, yes. We can talk more about that.
Yeah, I do want to hear about the what you call the ABCs and some bike safety stuff from you.
Okay. Well, so there's two ways to earn a bike with us, and the primary way is to take a free online bike safety test. Pass that with a 70%, and then you'll get the opportunity to come in and select a bike from our Earn a Bike inventory. We also have you can do 10 hours of shop time as well to earn a bike.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. What do you in that shop time? What do you teach people?
They're going to get their hands dirty. If we can't keep a bike intact, they'll learn something about how a bike is put together by taking it apart.
I'm guessing they learn a little bit about bike quality at the same time.
Oh yes, and some were able to, during that 10 hours, coach them through how to change a flat and do some other basic and minor repair.
Let's talk a little bit about safety. Are bicyclists not afraid enough about their surroundings? I mean, I know I'm a bit more nervous when I'm cycling on a four-lane street than I am on a two-lane street. Are cyclists just not aware enough of what's going on around them? Should they be more afraid?
It's always good to have some amount of fear when you're on a bicycle, you just have to keep that. Some people through our program haven't been on a bike in decades, so there's just the fear of whether they're physically ready.
I'm guessing when they get on that bike, they say, "Oh, it's just like right now." Sorry,
but just having gone through that free online bike safety test removes a lot of that fear.
Interesting. Complete the sentence here. If all bicyclists started doing blank, we'd have many fewer accidents.
I think a lot of cyclists assume that they know the rules of the road. And so they really, even veteran cyclists would benefit from becoming aware and accustomed of the rules of the road.
What's the number one rule, one, two, or three rules that most bicyclists aren't aware of? Things like, biking on the correct side of the street or stopping at stop signs.
Don't get me started.
Okay, tell me. I'm getting you started here.
Right. You see a lot of that happening in Kansas City where a cyclist is going against traffic. So,
why do they do that?
I think that came from the 50s. I think
where you think you're going to see the traffic more if you're going opposite.
Yeah,
and they're going to see you, and they're obviously not going to hit you.
That's their way supposedly of making sure that cars see them. Mm-hmm. But motorists are not trained to see traffic coming at them.
Interesting.
And then there's the factors of coming up a hill, and there's a cyclist. A cyclist always needs to be moving in the same direction as traffic.
What else do bicyclists? I'm not trying to do an expose on cyclists here. I mean, I am one myself, but I pretend to be one. But what other things do cyclists do that they just shouldn't be doing? That these rules that they don't know about.
Generally, you never want a motorist to guess what you are intending to do. Motorists have such a hard time indicating and communicating their turns. So a cyclist has to go above and beyond and always be in communication with other motorists and
hand signals, for example.
Absolutely.
How about turn signals on bike? Good idea, bad idea? Like on a motorcycle, these little itty bitty lights. I mean, should they be a substitute for hand signals, or are hand signals really the right way to go?
I would. I don't have any information to back that up, but you'd want to be a little more active and do the signaling yourself. And for that reason, I also advocate for, if you're scanning behind you, if you can, do the motion instead of relying on a mirror. because the act of scanning behind you is also a point of communication.
I haven't thought about that. Mm-hmm. Let's say hello to Gary in Midtown Kansas City. Gary, thanks for calling Central Standard.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to try to help out.
Sure. Go ahead.
I have some thoughts about riding safely in town. I used to live out in the suburbs, and now I live in the Midtown. And one thing is, when there's a four-lane street, there's often a two-lane street nearby that is probably less hazardous and has lower traffic speed, because one of the biggest hazards to cyclists is the closing speed between a car and a bike. And so with that in mind, you know, this is a hilly area, and I think the best way to summarize how a bike is in the hilly areas is sometimes you're a motorcycle, sometimes you're a bike, and sometimes you're a pedestrian, and I'll explain. When you're going downhill at 25 or 30 miles an hour entering an intersection, you're like a motorcycle, and you're wise to try to look and make eye contact with people who might pull out in front of you as you go to an intersection, make sure that the traffic light's doing what you think it is, et cetera, because you're traveling about motorcycle speed, and just like motorists don't see motorcyclists, they don't see bikers either sometimes, so it's a matter of self-defense. And then other times when you're climbing a hill, if you're going relatively slow, you need to stay really far to the right and be courteous to the cars behind you. And I think the motorists ought to know that Kansas and Missouri both have the dead red rule, where if you come to a dead stop and there's a red light but the traffic's clear, the cyclist can actually go through, and that's to your advantage sometimes. I think it's safer to get out through a traffic light rather than be part of the mix when the whole group is starting up from a traffic light. And then finally, if you come to a stoplight and there's traffic at a stoplight and you're part of the line of traffic, that's where I think you're a motorcycle too, and you line up right behind the next car's bumper. You don't pass them on the right and make people angry and go up to the very front of the line to make people have to pass you again. But you take your turn. Plus, by sitting behind the bumper of a car in front of you, if somebody unexpectedly turns right, you don't get cut off by a right turner cutting right into your path. So, again,
point.
I think it's sometimes you're a motorcycle, sometimes you're a bike, and sometimes you're a pedestrian.
Gary, go ahead.
That's the most concise way to summarize it.
Gary, that's a great call. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us today. I appreciate it.
Yes. You're welcome. One more thing is just don't get doored, which, in other words, when you're coming up in a line of cars that are parked, you never know if someone's going to open a driver's side door. And so it's always good to give yourself an escape route. So, first of all, don't ride right next to the cars, and secondly, give yourself enough room that if somebody does unexpectedly pop a door out, that they don't happen to catch you, too.
Mm, good ideas. Did you want to say something, Aaron?
No.
Okay. Let's go to Kevin in St. Joe. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a question about within the state of Missouri, is there a way that you can get a booklet or something on the cycling laws in the state?
That's a really good question.
I can answer to that.
Sure.
If you'll go on to the website of the Missouri Bicycle and Pedestrian Federation, the traffic law as it relates to bicycles is all there in a PDF available for downloading.
Hmm.
So that would be mobikeped.org.
Do you think people should have to have some, not maybe licensing for bikes, but do you think some people, everyone should be able to pass a simple test for bicycling?
Not a bad idea. Like I said, a lot of people that are veterans assume that they know what to do.
Would we have fewer incidents, accidents, if that were the case?
Well, I think a lot can also be done with motorist education,
mm-hmm.
And how they share the road with cyclists.
Mm, okay. Biking isn't an alternative for many people. It's their only option, right?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, for some people, biking is a hobby, and they leave their car at home. But for some people, it's not an option.
That's right.
And how many people do you see in your shop for whom biking is the only option or public transit is the only option?
I'd say a third to a half of the people going through our Earn a Bike program,
mm-hmm.
they are in it to get to work or just necessary errands.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start taking up cycling as a profession?
Oh, as a profession?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess. I don't know. Maybe 5 years ago.
I mean, what made you think that, you know, bicycling was the future for Elizabeth Bajon?
Okay. Well, I'd have to go back to when I heard former Mayor Mark Funkhauser make the declaration that Kansas City was going to become a platinum-level bicycle-friendly community by 2020. And I said to myself, oh, no, he did not just say that. I had just
where are we now, by the way? We're at bronze?
We're bronze.
So we've got a ways to go in the next 7 years, don't we?
Yes.
Do you think we're going to get there?
I think we are.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I think the attitudes are shifting that need to shift for Kansas City, Missouri, to make that happen. Our limitation is budget and, you know, what we can get constructed. But there's definitely a commitment from our civic leaders as well as city staff and various departments to make it happen.
Hmm. What does it take to become platinum level?
There's not a cookie cutter sort of answer to that. It's based on a number of things. One is the amount of infrastructure, but it's also things like education and encouragement programs. So things like bike share and bike advocacy that happens in the region. It includes things like the city's going to be launching something called Ciclovia this year. And that's a worldwide phenomenon.
I thought it was a disease.
No, it's a wonderful, wonderful initiative started in Bogota, Colombia, where they closed down a long stretch of city street and basically allow non-motorized travel for a period of the day. And it's taken off across the United States, and we have actually some grant funds to make that happen. So we'll be launching that later this year.
Break some news here for me. What street is it going to be?
We haven't decided the location
yet. What are you thinking? Give me top four.
You know, a great location would be something like Independence Avenue, where you've got local businesses that people can frequent and kind of be more of a festival in the street type thing, and encourage people to stop and patron those businesses as well as get out and ride and bike and run. And,
Main Street on that list, perhaps?
You never know.
Okay.
We'll take suggestions.
Aaron, do you have any ideas for what city, what street you'd like to see closed down for? How long are we saying? A day?
Usually it's half a day,
okay.
You know, 3 to 4 hours.
Okay.
Well, I think Deb points out some good options. It's probably a street that's going to have a lot of businesses on it.
Okay.
It's where you can kind of slow things down. The first Fridays that they have in the River Market area, or not the River Market, but the
Crossroads.
That's a great example of the kind of location. I think something like that would work well in.
And I'll say that for Kansas City, Kansas, where we will have our second nonprofit bike shop, Central Avenue is being considered for a Ciclovia.
Neat. Elizabeth, what are your Earn a Bike program? How many bikes have you given away since you started the program?
I'm so glad you asked. 240 since we began operating in August of 2011.
Wow. And do you wish it was more?
I know it will be more. We'll be going through our strategic planning process in February 9th. We're going to set our sights on probably reaching 2,500 riders in the next 5 years.
Wow. Let's go bike shopping here. What are the simplest mistakes people make when looking to purchase a bike?
A lot of guys will try to get on a bike that's too big for them.
Hmm.
In the event that they slip off those pedals,
ouch!
Not a happy situation.
Oh, no.
And then a thing for women to consider with their smaller hands, maybe smaller in stature, is that you want to be able to have your hands reach the brake levers and press those brake levers.
Well, what does the ordinary person need and what's not necessary?
I'm an advocate of a helmet. Okay. And let's have that helmet fit correctly on the head so that it gives you the maximum protection.
Mm-hmm. And beyond a bicycle and a helmet, what else do I need?
On a day like today, you'd need some eye protection, or when it's cold and the biting wind at your face, some eye protection, gloves in the event of, sweat getting on the grips or in the event of a fall.
So help me out here.
What's totally unnecessary is spandex.
Yeah, why do – okay, those are the upper middle class white men I see riding around, and they're multicolored. I want to be a race – okay,
right.
Spandex. So, well, how about bike shorts?
They do serve a purpose. If you're doing miles and miles and miles, trust me, you don't want to be in jeans where there's seams in the way.
Uh-huh.
But if you're doing a charity ride, if you're going out for 20 miles, 30 miles at a good speed – They do serve a purpose.
So help me out here. I can't afford a Matthew Long Middleton fancy Italian Bianchi bike, okay? And I'm not ready to huff and puff on a Huffy or another box store bike, as you call them. Mm-hmm. What should an out-of-shape Steven Steigman look for in a good bike?
Probably upright trail bike, a little bit versatile, that will get you out there on the trails, and you can get on the Kansas City streets.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go for front any kind of suspension.
No suspension.
You don't need suspension. It's just heavy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. Well, how about, when I'm looking at a bike, are there certain things I should look out for? Like, if I'm shopping for a used car, I'm looking for rust and I'm looking for paperwork and things like that. What should I look for in a used bike to make sure that it's going to be okay? It's going to last me a little while.
Condition of the tires, condition of the brake pads,
mm-hmm.
Rust on the cables.
Mm. Can these things be changed, switched out?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, and so...
For not a whole lot of money.
Okay, that's good. This has been a great discussion. Thank you. Our guest today, Aaron Bartlett. He's Bicycle and Training Coordinator for the Mid-America Regional Council. Deb Ridgeway, the Bicycle Pedestrian Coordinator for the City of Kansas City, Missouri. And Elizabeth Bajan, who started and runs Revolve KC. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
You can find our Central Standard Archives, podcasts, and a lot more at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we meet with members of the Mayor's Task Force that are envisioning arts and culture in Kansas City. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Claire McInerney. Up to Date is next with reaction to Governor Nixon's State of the State address, a talk with Missouri's Secretary of State, and a remembrance of Kansas City philanthropist Adele Hall. I'm Steven Steigman, and this is Central Standard.